Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast, a podcast that is dedicated to industry heroes such as yourself. And if you're looking out on video, I'm pointing at you right there. Yeah, that's you. You are bold, you are brave. You dare greatly, you innovate like nobody's business, and you're changing lives and you're changing the world as we speak, and that's why this podcast is here to celebrate you. Thank you very much for what you are doing. All right, we got another one, and you're saying to yourself, Scott, you always have great interviews. Yes, I do, because industry is great and people are great, so get used to it because that's what we're all about. Yoav Kutner. Okay, that's Yoav Kutner. And if you go out to his stat card, his LinkedIn stat card, you will quickly notice that he is smarter than I am. All right, let's get cracking here. All right, we've got a couple of things that we've got to sort to do some business here. All right, I'm all about education. You know that. That's what this platform is all about, educating. And I'm all about collaborating. I'm all about innovation. You got to do that. If you want to survive, rebuild, and prosper in this new world, you're going to have to educate all the time. You can't come to me and say, Scott, I don't know how to educate. It's a worldwide web out there. There's a lot of great stuff, and the Industrial Talk Podcast is dedicated to that education. Now, I want to point out something that is just absolutely spectacular. This is brought to you by those wonderful people at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. It is the Connected Systems Institute. Now, just go out to uwm.edu/CSI, get all that information, and they're just educating the workforce of the future. So we talk about Industry 4.0, digital transformation, and everything underneath it. That organization is absolutely dedicated to your success. How can you can't argue against that either. This platform is just really just chock full of great stuff for you. Yoav, how are you doing?
Hello. I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being on the podcast. I'm excited about this conversation, as you can tell. I've got your website up. I've got your stat card up, and I've got pretty much everything about you up, even your form up. And so we've got about 5 days of information to cut into about 20 minutes of a conversation, but we're not going to do that. All right. For the listeners out there, give us a little 411 on who you are and why you're such an incredible technology professional. Absolutely.
Well, thank you for that. I've never heard that I'm an incredible technology person, but we'll take the compliment.
Then your LinkedIn stat card is lying then, because it is.
Well, it's self-edited.
Although you're a Bruin. You're a Bruin.
I am a Bruin. That's all right. Correct. So, let me talk about so again, like I mentioned when we were first contacted, I'm around for a while. I talked with you. I was around with mainframes, VAX computers. So I've seen a lot of things. I've seen the internet taking over. I remember, just to show you how not smart I am, when the first time somebody showed me the internet, I was like, that's a fad. Nobody's going to look at this green screen with all this data. So, you know, that's the first time I saw that.
Whoops.
Oops. A big one. So there goes the smart compliment. You know, I was all into these private networks and stuff like that. That said, once it started taking over, my claim to fame was co-founding a company called Magento in 2004. Later, we released a product called Magento that was a B2C e-commerce platform, an open source one at that. So we can talk about a bit the open source kind of approach and strategy, as we call it. And that platform did very well. We got really good adoption. I think at our height when I left, it was about 35% market share of all online B2C e-commerce stores. Yeah, that was great. With no number two. Nobody came second almost. It was like very, very
You were category king, baby.
We were. And some countries like Australia, we had 50%, where number two was homegrown. So we really took the market over the B2C market. And that
was going to borrow some money.
Yes, of course. It's my side business, of course. So we actually did pretty well with that. We got really good adoption and learned a lot of what was happening in the world of e-commerce at the time. We later, in around 2011, finalized the sale to eBay and PayPal, actually, within eBay. And that went pretty well. I think the product itself, Magento, is still around. It was bought by Adobe, and now it's taking its own life form. It's already in their version, major version 2. So great to see that the brand is still around. I mean, it's been
That's pretty
about
cool.
11 years already around, so
Yep.
that's great.
Wow, that's right. That's right. Wow, that is a pretty cool. That's a cool
Yeah,
stat. I like
it's
that.
like I refer to it as my estranged son, because we don't talk anymore, but I love kind of following up on the progression and success, from the sidelines. So it's
stalking
stalking
your son.
my son, yeah.
That's Magenta then. All right, so let's go down this road, and I want to make sure that the listeners understand. Can you just sort of level set, talk to us a little bit about what open source means? Outside, it sounds
Absolutely.
cool. Oh, open source. What does that mean?
Well, open source is again kind of a philosophy where you don't want to patent or close source, which is more the traditional term. But the idea of code is that it used to be compiled, and it used to be used as a black box. You didn't see actually how things were written and done and implemented, and you would use the product. If you had to modify it or change it, you were limited to whatever configuration or API or interface was allowed to you to use, but that was it. What happened, I think it's already for many, many years, but definitely the 70 took a lot of momentum, was developers that were not interested in copywriting, if you want, or licensing their software, and actually provided the code that they wrote alongside with their source code with different licenses, which is actually the open source license kind of story. But again, we won't get into that. But that license allows you to actually use the code and actually modify it with some limitations or not to your own use. So before all these modern object-oriented development and all that was like the best way for companies to take something that was very close to what they needed, but not 100%, modify it from the source code without limitations and making actually sure that that works for everything they need to do. And with the biggest thing is no vendor lock-in, because there was no necessarily relationship between the vendor, the actual producer of the software, and the company using it, which was beautiful, right? Because you would get somebody's work and just build on that and use it for your own needs. That said, what happened usually around an open source is an ecosystem of a community of developers, community of users, the actual software vendor, and that usually caused these open source tools to get developed so much faster and adopted faster and get feedback faster and move faster than the closed source solutions that were very limited. And that's why open source is something that's been growing for the last 40 years in very high speed. I mean, a lot of people don't even realize, and when I say people, companies we talk to, don't even realize that a lot of their tools that they're using are actually based or built on open source code, right, that somebody was using. Now,
I
today,
love it.
if we jump ahead a bit, this is as technical as we'll get probably, but if I jump ahead a few years now, today the actual source code with all the object-oriented APIs, software, I mean service-oriented architecture and stuff like that, maybe is a little bit less relevant. You will not necessarily go and modify the actual core code, but you'll build on top of it, extend it. But where open source is still very much important is, like I said, with the license. So what you're actually able to use it, how you're able to use it, are you able to resell it, are you able to use it only internally, stuff like that. So it's all about the license today and how you can actually use it for your own benefit. There's big case right now going on, with Google and big lawsuit there. So I think we are in a place where today open source is more about the license, the freedom to actually build on that, use it commercially, without, again, the vendor lock-in, which is the biggest part of it. So if you like the vendor, you work with them. If you don't like the vendor, you actually can invest in your own developers and make sure the technology works. And again, with no limitations, which is, if we look at SaaS platforms like Salesforce, we talked about Salesforce quickly, you are limited to whatever they expose to you, right? And you end up building a lot of these custom applications living in third worlds around that application, not in exactly that hosting environment, not as efficient, not as performant. But when we talk about open source, you can actually still modify source code if needed to you know, extensive use cases.
See, and from my perspective, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I like the speed. I mean, especially today, and when we start looking at, let's say, Industry 4.0, all of that whole, technology itself is just evolving at such a blistering pace. I mean, I don't see how you can not get more into that open source type of mindset and be able to deploy solutions that truly meet your business needs as fast as you possibly can. I don't see how you can ignore that, which then brings us to this, the product that we're going to be talking a little bit about. That once again, listeners out there, it's Oro, O-R-O, right? Inc. is the .com is the website. The product is a series of Oro, so they got commerce and CRM and platforms and all that stuff. And I'm looking out at the website. I didn't just sort of pull this off of my head. I'm just using their website right now, and I'm just sort of. And the one that just sort of fascinates me is this Oro Commerce. Can you give us a little sort of background into that? What is it?
Yeah, absolutely. So Oro Commerce actually came from what we learned through the years of at Magento. So we, like I said, developed a B2C e-commerce platform. The problem was that we started seeing more and more companies that were contacting us that were not necessarily selling directly to consumers. They were more about selling to other companies, which makes them a B2B company. We were much younger and definitely had the ego to match that. And we were open source and flexible, et cetera. We said, you know, we can do anything. So when we got approached, we said, yeah, absolutely. We can serve your needs. We can build on top of what we have already. But because we were so focused on the B2C side of the equation of this, we kind of left a lot of the basic kind of architectural features out, right? We didn't focus on them. We didn't even know them about B2B at the time. So when we started working with B2B companies, we saw that fundamental features were missing in the platform. So fast forward, when I left Magento, 8 months later, we created a new company called Oro. And Oro, one of the products we kind of worked with on was the B2B e-commerce platform, which is kind of our take on e-commerce, but for companies selling to other companies. And so, no, that's and fundamentally a different approach. Yeah.
So I got to step in. So for the listeners out there, let's try to simplify it in a sense. It's like, hey, I'm Acme, you're Beta. We can use this platform to engage in commerce. Is that it?
That's... in a nutshell, that's it. We have three main use cases that we kind of talk about, and then we kind of start breaking out from. But the first one is exactly what you said, which is the buyer-seller interaction.
Yeah.
And that's a buyer doing some research, finding a seller or a manufacturer or brand or distributor that he wants to work with. They get in contact, they get in touch, submit maybe a request for a quote or a request for pricing, get this pricing. And then put in an order, right?
Yeah.
So taking all that world digitally, that's our main focus, basically, because this world is changing. This world is, especially with COVID, we've seen that conferences, trade shows were not even an option, right? That's where a lot of these B2B business and orders were actually done, introductions, et cetera. So we're really trying to move this whole world to digital. That's kind of what we're doing.
So I'm Acme. I'm a buyer and I'm looking for a seller. Do I go through the Oro Commerce platform to find sellers so I can be in your platform and say, hey, check it out. That's a company and whatever the details associated with, I can do that in your platform?
No. I mean, unless you build the marketplace, which we'll get into that part. But we're just a software provider. We don't provide any services to do that. Right? So the best way to find you is where actually most researchers start today, is on Google or on any other search engine. I won't get into that war, but let's say any search engine is where today most researchers and buyers are starting their search today. And that's overtaking any kind of trade show, any kind of conference, anything like that. So if you build your site with a platform like ours, you'll be searchable and indexable, and then people can actually find you. So you don't have to go through us. Nobody needs to know who Oro is. We like to be in the shadow.
Oh.
We like to make other people upfront and successful. So we're not like an eBay for B2B or Alibaba or anything like that. We are not a marketplace on our own. We do provide a marketplace is one of our features or actual products, but we are definitely about running your business, making your business visible. And that's a big change and a big kind of attitude change, I guess, for B2B companies, that they have to be visible online today. They're missing out on so many potential customers, so many potential orders, so many potential deals, because they are not searchable or indexable online.
So does your platform optimize that SEO, whatever, you know, dealio? Yep. So I'm once again, I'm Acme. I'm interested in finding a seller of, I'll make it simple, spoons. So yeah, I'll go on my my search engine, and it's because of your platform, which is embedded in my their site, whatever this spoon site. You give them a level of robustness that I'm able to find. It's like, hey, check it out, man. Spoon Inc. is right there.
Yep. And that's, we will be actually running the website. Usually, in most use cases, we are even running the front end, the whole experience, customer experience, et cetera.
What?
We have, yes, we have other implementation, headless, PWA, et cetera. But in a nutshell, we actually are the website that most people will hit, either directly or through a CMS, if it's a very big company and they have this content management system in front of us. But we actually have the front end and the back end. So you get everything in one. So let me start. Let me maybe simplify.
Wow.
Our first,
I have to get that out of me.
Our first kind of steps that we usually do with a lot of very traditional B2B companies is just publish their catalog online. So that means that they do have a way to get the catalog out of their ERP or order management system, or where not, or a PIM, a product information management system, that where all the product information sits. But that information has to be published in a e-commerce style, catalog style CMS, which is what we built. So we have a very good platform to build your website that will actually make all your products visible online, and of course then SEO friendly and indexable and searchable, etc. So a lot of times that's the first thing we do. We come to a company, we say, look, if somebody searches for your products, they find nothing. Best case, they find some, you know, this static website that somebody has a phone number on, that's
freaking
probably
business
goes to,
card, that's about,
yeah,
it,
exactly, right? So, or a phone number to a sales rep that doesn't work there anymore, right? And that's what we do. We actually create, you know, I'll go all the way back for about 15 years. We create dynamic websites, right, that are actually not static. So you can actually update them. You can, like any CMS, like you would do for any kind of website, but focused and specializing in catalog publishing, basically.
Okay, I gotta interrupt real quick, because you know that data is absolutely horrible. When you go to a customer and you're saying, hey, let's just get this thing online, let's make it all robust and everything, give us your catalog, I guarantee it, that's when it starts.
Absolutely. With many, we have manufacturers of nails. So when we told them to give us pictures, they say, well, a nail's a nail, you know? So yeah, we just had to adjust to how we showed the data. So yeah, images may be not the strongest suit for that industry. Wow. And that's acceptable. Again, you are dinged on Google and all that, but you know, it doesn't change the fact that your competitors will not have better pictures of nails, right? So for that industry, that's what it is.
But that's so cool. Okay. Yeah. Continue, man. This is a conversation, by the way. I'm enjoying this conversation a lot.
Thank you. It's nice to meet people that find B2B e-commerce interesting, because a lot of people would say I'm like in the B2B e-commerce business, everybody's like, what? Say again? What? What is that?
It's like, isn't that interesting? Yeah. All right. Okay.
No, but we really love it. I mean, one of my passions and the reason I'm actually doing this, it's because I really like coming to companies and kind of automating, digitizing a lot of what they do. It's really something I've been doing for many, many years since my first professional out of the army was like career as a developer was on a salary program that we were developing way back then, and just like for HR and stuff like that, and we would come to companies and automate the whole, you know, HR salary kind of processing and stuff like that. So it was like, you know, who cared? But back then we were, you know, making people's life so much easier, and it's something that I really like coming to a company and seeing this 3 months down the road, that how much we kind of helped them, how much we kind of saved them time and made their life easier and more productive. And I think when we talk about e-commerce, we're putting that on steroids. It's like we can today really digitize any process that your company does, automate it. And the big question is, or the big problem is, we do not replace the sales guys. We actually make them more efficient, more able to find new customers easier, right? Which is a lot of the CRM pitch. But we are definitely helping the companies stay relevant, be able to survive pandemics and stuff that a lot of people didn't realize that might happen. But really, the way the world works today, it's digital, right? And we're seeing this throughout the sales process. Like I mentioned, most research will be started online today, even if they'll end up meeting.
I have to go on a tangent here. What's your viewpoint on, because I'm all into what you're talking about, what's your viewpoint on conferences?
Well, conferences are great. I mean, especially we have a lot of business in Europe, and they're shaking hands, having a cup of coffee is still part of how you do business. I think the shock of the pandemic and our European customers was a bit bigger. We actually had still salespeople travel there, and we were like, "What's happening?" They say, "Well, they won't shake, you know, they won't sign the deal without shaking the hand." So it's something that it's still relevant. I don't think it will go away. I think, you know, people are still happy to meet each other. But like I said, you can come much more informed today to a conference, right? Before you go to a conference, you can actually start searching online some of these companies. Now, if you come informed, you can maybe already start requesting pricing before. So when you get there, you just don't waste your time on the whole cycle of the meeting, of handshaking, and then talking business. You can come much more prepared. And not only that, let me give you another thing we're doing for a real customer of ours. And we went to their trade show. We saw how that happened, how that works. They're in the animal kind of their animal supply distributor, and they're like pet food, pet supplies, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's a huge conference. It's really a thing to see, right? I went to Vegas. We saw that conference. The thing that we were helping them, except everything that we're doing on the online strategy and all that, with the conference in mind, is that we are digitizing how the orders are taken in the conference itself, right? We added these booths with touch screens that a sales rep can walk in with, you know, a new customer or an existing customer for that matter, pull all their data, pull all their relevant catalog, pull all their special pricing in front of them. Before that, they had these booklets, right, with this huge price books and stuff like that, and everybody had to remember, and there was constant screaming. When I went there, it was constantly kind of, did you know the price for that guy? He's from Cleveland, you know, what's the price that we can give that? It was more like a meat market than an actual, you know, like a
sausage grinder.
Yeah, than like a conference for, you know, about having a relationship with your customer. And once we did some pilot with that, we saw that one of the things that actually really helped was we decreased the number of errors in entering these orders, the keying in these errors, the orders, sorry, later, right? Because you would write it on paper, collect all these papers, go back to the office, and then the sales reps used to start keying them in, making tons of mistakes and not being able to read that. So just there, we already improved. By the time the customer got back home from the conference, the order might have already been waiting for them there, right? And it's something that we're really changing and improving, I think, the customer experience, the usability, efficiency,
etc. God, et I like that.
That's all connected to our system. These kiosks are just another front end, basically. Instead of a web-based, it's just another front end of our application.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I'm all in. Why aren't people all in? What's a big deal?
Yeah, that's where we started seeing the challenges. So I think one of the things, and again, I'm looking at my previous life at Magento versus where I am today. In the B2C world, we really hit the wave on the right. I'm from California. Sorry, I might have some surfing analogies. But we hit the wave really when it was peaking, and we really, you know, everybody was changing the way they're doing business. They understood that they have to sell direct to consumers. A lot of brands, we actually, when we released Magento, a lot of brands that were not traditionally selling direct to consumers, even big brands, decided because of the 08 kind of crash that they have to start improving business, and why not start selling directly to consumers? So we saw a lot of that happening. So it was really a perfect storm in terms of how people were changing their attitudes on selling directly to consumers. I think today with the B2B, we are on the cusp of the same kind of moment. A lot of businesses have to kind of update the way they're doing business. They have to maybe get out of their circle of customers and expand it. International, I know it's a bad word for many, but selling cross-border, especially in Europe, we see this more and more taking over, and for a while in Europe, of course. But I think in US, the US market will also have to kind of learn to deal with other countries. So we definitely have to have B2B kind of platforms that will allow these features to be implemented so companies can actually modify the way they do business. That said, when we come to companies and we talk technology, we sometimes are surprised how behind the curve they are when it comes to technology. We talked about mainframes, and let me throw another term at you, AS400, still around, running ERPs, right? That are archaic. You cannot change anything. They're like,
no.
We ask them, can you change this API? And they say, well, yeah, I don't know if Roger will pick up the phone. He's retired. You know, it's like, these are the answers.
It's expensive as hell. Yeah,
it
we
is
can.
Expensive. Yeah. Yeah. It is expensive, but we're really finding that they're really behind the curve on technology. I said, a lot of times where we start from is just publishing their catalog online, which seems trivial, but like you said, it's not at all, because the product information is not there. The quality of the product information is not suitable. So that's not an easy, I talk about it like it's a trivial thing. It's not. It's changing the culture of how you talk about your product.
Yeah.
What content you have about your product? If you are a distributor, you need to get that content from your merchants that are selling through the manufacturers. If you're a manufacturer, you need to get it from your supply line, right? Who's ever giving you those descriptions? So a lot of non-trivial things on the culture of how the company is actually operating, and that's across the board. We're getting pushbacks from the marketing team. They don't know to work with necessarily with the online marketing. They know more about print marketing. It's about the sales team doesn't want
to... I'm just telling you right now. All right, we're going to have to wrap this up. I mean, come on. You guys have got to be... if you guys go out to Oro Inc., that's OROINC.com, click on Oro Commerce. There is a demo of the platform that I think you need to take notice of, listener. Don't come to me and say you don't have an idea or a solution. This is cool stuff. Dead sexy. Are you active out on LinkedIn there, Yoav?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, you're going to have every doggone link known to man for this company, this individual, and the value proposition that they bring to the table. B2B is the way to go. I like it a lot. Thank you for
Thank
joining
you for
the Industrial Talk Pod. This was great. We could talk for hours. I'm telling you,
absolutely.
We could. I'm just trying to spare the listeners of this. All right, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you very much. We're going to have another great interview just around the corner, so thank you.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.